Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Alice Bryant, Christopher Jones-Cruz, Brian Lynn, and Pete Musto. And Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Alice Bryant.
The death of former Cuban President Fidel Castro has produced a mix of reactions in the United States. The death confirms sharp differences in the thinking of President Barack Obama and his replacement, President-elect Donald Trump. It has also led to discussions about how the U.S. government will deal with Cuba when Trump becomes president in January. President Obama considers reestablishing ties with Cuba after more than 50 years of tensions, one of his greatest foreign policy successes. Obama, who visited the country in March, became the first sitting U.S. president to do so since 1928. Obama told the Cuban people, "I have come here to bury the last remnants of the Cold War in the Americas." In September 2015, Trump supported Obama's decision to open up relations with Cuba. "I think it's fine," he told the Daily Caller website. "We should have made a better deal, but the concept of opening with Cuba, 50 years is enough." However, during the election campaign, Trump began to strongly criticize the decision to normalize relations. Now, he is almost always critical of the move. In a statement released soon after Castro's death last Friday, Obama said, "History will record and judge the enormous impact of this singular figure on the people and the world around him." He added that the United States offers a hand of friendship to the Cuban people. Some U.S. lawmakers immediately criticized the statement. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, a Republican, called it pathetic. He noted that the statement did not talk about the thousands of people Castro killed and imprisoned. Rubio's parents lived in Cuba and moved to the United States in the 1950s. Another Republican, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, told ABC News that he hopes we don't see any U.S. government officials going to Fidel Castro's funeral. Cruz's father was born in Cuba and now, like Rubio's parents, is a Cuban American. Trump released a statement after Castro's death. He called the former leader a brutal dictator who oppressed his own people for nearly six decades. He blamed Castro for firing squads, theft, unimaginable suffering, poverty, and the denial of fundamental human rights. Trump promised that, as president, he will do all he can to ensure the Cuban people can finally begin their journey toward prosperity and liberty. It is not known how relations between the two countries will change when Trump takes office. Kellyanne Conway is a top aide to the president-elect. She told ABC News that Trump will demand that Cuba make changes. Conway said the release of political prisoners would have an important effect on relations. She also said the president-elect is absolutely willing to change the Obama policy on Cuba. Some lawmakers hope Castro's death will lead to improved relations between the two countries. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and some Republicans support a bill that would end the 50-year-old ban on U.S. trade with Cuba. I'm Alice Bryant.
Some Cuban Americans believe the death of Fidel Castro means human rights abuses in Cuba will end. Jose Sanchez is one of them.
That a bad dictator that had Cuba under oppression and repression for almost six decades is no longer with us, and that will give an opportunity to the Cuban people to start the journey towards freedom and democracy.
Sanchez lives in Little Havana, an area of Miami, Florida, where many Cuban Americans live. Lisette Calderon lives there too. She says the death of Fidel Castro is the beginning of a new Cuba.
The people of Cuba do not have free elections. There's no democracy. And I think those of us aren't going to rest until we see the freedom for the people of Cuba.
Fidel Castro began ruling the country in 1959. In 2008, he gave the presidency to his younger brother, Raúl. For almost 58 years, the Cuban people have had few civil and political freedoms. Thousands of activists have been punished or imprisoned. In 2014, relations between the United States and Cuba were reestablished. But that change did not decrease limits on freedoms in Cuba. Few people have access to the Internet. Journalists and human rights activists are still regularly detained. Guadalupe Correa is a professor of government affairs and security studies at the University of Texas. She told VOA on Skype that Raúl Castro, who has slowly taken control of Cuba, must now decide if his brother's death will bring major changes to the country.
To change his approach to his own country and allow the country to be more open.
Some American lawmakers made similar statements on Twitter. Congressman Carlos Curbelo said Castro's death is an opportunity for opposition leaders in Cuba to become stronger. But Brian Fonseca, the director of the Public Policy Institute at Florida International University, is not as optimistic. He told VOA on Skype that human rights activists will see things get worse in Cuba before they get better. He says that is because people in power want to keep power. So, he says, current political leaders might react to Castro's death by limiting any opposition, at least in the short term. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
During his life, Fidel Castro blamed Cuba's economic problems on the United States and its restrictions on trade with Cuba. Now, after Castro's death, many people are wondering what will happen to the economic relationship between the two countries. The election of Donald Trump as U.S. president will likely make the situation even more complex. The U.S. trade restrictions on Cuba, or the embargo, remain in place. But President Barack Obama recently eased some of those limits. Obama re-established diplomatic ties between Cuba and the United States. The two sides opened embassies in each other's capitals in 2015. And the improved relations have led to an increase in the number of U.S. visitors to Cuba. Yet many U.S. companies say the government in Cuba makes it hard for foreigners to do business there. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez says economic links remain firmly connected to Castro's family.
You want to do business in Cuba? You want to be part of the hotel industry or the tourism industry? You got to go see Raul's son. You want to go ahead and do agriculture business in Cuba? You got to do it with his son-in-law, both high-ranking officials of the Cuban military.
Jose Azel is an expert on Cuba at the University of Miami in Florida. He agrees that the Cuban government has too many restrictions on foreign businesses. Azel said that foreign investors must share control of their business interests with the Cuban military. And, he adds, the foreigners cannot control who works for their company in Cuba. But Azel does not believe the country will change its central planning system soon. Another issue for U.S.-Cuba relations is the election of businessman Donald Trump. During the presidential campaign, Trump criticized President Obama's moves to ease tensions between the two countries. Trump said he will undo Obama's actions unless Cuba gives more religious and political freedom to its people. He also wants Cuba to release political prisoners.
Driverless technology is quickly progressing, with many cars being tested on roads around the world. Now, researchers in Singapore are testing a different kind of self-driving vehicle, a scooter. The scooter has four wheels and a single seat. It can move at speeds of up to 6 kilometers an hour. It is equipped with sensors to help it avoid people and objects. The scooter was developed at the National University of Singapore. Researchers with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, also took part in the project. This experimental vehicle was designed for people who cannot, should not, or do not want to drive a car. It could help older adults the disabled, or people who are too young to drive. The scooter can be used outside or inside buildings. Marcello Ang is with the Department of Mechanical Engineering at the National University of Singapore. He says the scooter can be especially useful for people who use wireless devices while walking on city streets.
I'm sure you have experienced people just using their handphone while walking and almost running into you. It would be so nice if you're just sitting down and checking your email, doing some things.
An demonstrated the technology and said the scooter has completed many successful tests at the university. He said the first model was built with off-the-shelf materials that did not cost a lot of money. The researchers hope the scooter will decrease the need for automobiles, which can lower pollution and reduce accidents. Earlier this year, Singapore became one of the first cities in the world to launch driverless taxi service. Developers of the scooter say it can work together with ride-sharing services to make trips completely seamless. Kevin Zhangyu Hui, a university student, tested the scooter and said he found the ride was very smooth and safe.
When you sit on this machine, you'd feel really relaxed and it's really cool.
The scooter has yet to complete a series of road tests, so it is not available to buy. Yet. I'm Brian Lin.
The parts of a traditional piano have changed very little for hundreds of years. The keys are black and white in color, just like when classical musical greats like Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart and Johann Sebastian Bach were alive. But now, an electronic, piano-like musical instrument replaces those keys with surfaces that react to touch. A startup company called Roly began selling the electronic keyboard in 2013. The keyboard is known as Seaboard. It does not have the same white and black keys as a piano. Instead, it is made from soft, rubbery materials. Roland Lamb is the inventor of Seaboard and a jazz piano player. He says he invented Seaboard so he could create different kinds of sounds with the instrument.
I wanted to be able to express more from the keyboard and create the kinds of sounds and modulations that people could create on a bass or a guitar or a saxophone. And I was sitting at the piano and thinking, why can't I strike a note and then slide it and move it?
The way a person touches the keys on a Seaboard affects the instrument's sound. This new technology enables the player to create sounds that traditional pianos cannot make. Marco Parisi is a classical pianist. He likes Seaboard very much and says he is always learning something new he can do with it.
This is the most expressive instrument I ever played. And be able to use my piano technique and make that expressive changed my world.
Roland Lamb notes it would be harder for him to go back to playing a traditional piano. But Seaboard is not Lamb's only interesting musical invention. His latest creation is called Blocks. It is a small black box with a screen like a smartphone. When a person presses on the box in different places, Blocks produces different sounds. Pressing harder or softer changes the intensity of the musical notes. Lamb says the best thing about Blocks is that it is easy to use. Colored images on the screen represent different kinds of sounds. Blocks can record combinations of sounds. And people can buy and combine other devices to use with the small box. Lamb says he designed Blocks so that almost anyone can make top-quality music.
Now that I know the possibilities that one can access through new technologies and new sounds,
several world-famous music artists use Blocks. They include Grimes, Steve Aoki, and RZA. RZA helped demonstrate how to use Blocks at a special event Rowley held in New York in November. The performer had high praise for the device. "Music is something that you feel," he said. "Whether you know how to make music or not, or play music traditionally, when you start playing with this, you will find your voice." I'm Pete Musto.
This is What's Trending Today. President-elect Donald Trump and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had their last debate before the presidential election on October 19th. The moderator of the debate, Chris Matthews, asked Trump if he would accept the results of the election. In response, Trump said, "I will look at it at the time." Later in the conversation, he said, "I'll keep you in suspense, okay?" Trump is now the president-elect. He is set to take office in January. But officials have announced that they are recounting the votes in some states. In response, Trump wrote on Twitter that millions of people voted illegally for his opponent. News organizations and political analysts say no evidence supports Trump's claim. One reason that people are still disputing the results is because of how presidents are elected in the United States. States, not voters, choose the president. The system is called the Electoral College. In the 2016 election, Trump won enough states under the Electoral College system to beat Hillary Clinton, but he did not win the most votes overall. The results were very close in three of the states Trump won: Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. Activists are raising money to request the votes there be recounted. If the results change, Trump risks losing the Electoral College and therefore the election. This past weekend, Trump said on Twitter that he won the Electoral College. Trump also claimed there were illegal votes in three of the states Clinton won: Virginia, New Hampshire, and California. Trump asked, "Why isn't the media reporting on this?" Alex Padilla is the Secretary of State in California. He said Trump did not have evidence for his claim of illegal votes in California. Padilla added that Trump's tweets were reckless and unbecoming of a president-elect. And that's What's Trending Today.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Researchers have reported a breakthrough in the search for a treatment for Zika virus. To better understand this report, you will need to know the following words: antibody, vaccine, and immune system. Researchers have discovered an antibody that greatly reduces infection with Zika. This antibody could possibly be made into a vaccine to protect people against the virus. Researchers named the antibody ZIKV-117. An antibody is an immune system protein. Researchers got the antibody from a Zika patient. Then they tested the antibody in pregnant mice infected with Zika. ZIKV-117 protected the fetus against infection. The antibody creates a strong reaction to the virus in the immune system. In fact, ZIKV-117 neutralized, or made harmless, each kind of Zika that the scientists tested. The antibody also greatly decreased the amount of virus in the pregnant mice. And the researchers found decreased levels of the virus in fetal tissue, including brain tissue. Zika-infected male mice with the antibody were more likely to survive than those without. Some of the mice did not receive the antibody until 5 days after being infected with Zika. The antibody was still effective, suggesting that it can treat an active infection. Researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in Missouri and Vanderbilt University in Tennessee did the study. They reported their findings in the publication Nature. Michael Diamond is a microbiologist and immunologist at Washington University. A microbiologist studies extremely small forms of life, such as bacteria and viruses. An immunologist studies the ways in which the body protects itself from diseases and infections. Diamond was a lead investigator of the research.
Before this study, there had been no vaccine or any other study that had done anything in pregnant animals to show that anything could abort or prevent a disease. So one thing this does is suggest that antibodies are able to do it, and this actually bodes well for future vaccine efforts.
Diamond says scientists could develop ZIKV-117 into a drug that could be used different ways.
Either you give it before somebody went into a high-risk area, if they were traveling, or as soon as they knew they were pregnant and they were not infected already, or if they were pregnant and then got infected, but it was early in their stage of infection, you might be able to administer it and still have beneficial effects.
Diamond says researchers are now preparing to test the antibody in monkeys. This process, he says, could take 6 to 9 months. If those experiments are successful, human testing could begin soon after that. Zika can cause severe problems in newborns. The most worrisome is microcephaly. Microcephaly causes babies to be born with very small heads and brains. Researchers and doctors also think that Zika causes a rare and severe brain disease called Guillain-Barré. Zika, which is carried by mosquitoes, is currently spreading through the Americas. For the Health and Lifestyle Report, I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.